It is 10:03 on June 7th. We're going to, there is a quorum present. We're going to call this meeting to order. If you can all join me. Before you do that, please silence your cell phones, mine included. And join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Moving on to agenda item number 3. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the agenda for June 7, 2022. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about today's agenda?
No questions, thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell, any questions or comments?
No, I do not.
All right. County Manager Osborne, are there any changes to the agenda?
We just asked to remove item number 11, Comstock Cemetery Foundation. There's a little bit of work to do on the MOU.
Okay. Anything else? That's it?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? For those in the audience, if you have any public comment, please come up to the podium, state your name for the record. And for those on Zoom, you can use the raise your hand feature, the chat feature. And for those calling in, use star 6 to unmute yourself. One more call. Is there any public comment on today's agenda? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, make a motion.
Yeah, I move to approve today's agenda with the one noted change.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 4. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the minutes for April 19th, 2022. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about the minutes for April 19th?
No questions, thank you.
Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes for April 19th? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve the minutes of our April 19th meeting as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 5 is today's consent agenda. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about today's consent agenda?
I do not, thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman, any questions or comments?
No, thank you.
All right, is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's consent agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to public comments. This portion of public comment can be about anything that is not on today's agenda. Is there any public comment today? Going once. Sold. All right. We are going to move on to item number 7. This is discussion only. No action and no public comment will be taken. These are committee and staff reports. As we always do, we're going to start with the Sheriff's Office first.
Good morning, Commissioners. Nothing today.
Thank you, Sheriff. Moving on to the Fire Department. We have Chief Loncar on the phone. Nope, or somebody on his behalf? Nope. We will move on to Public Works. In person.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Board. Mike Northen, Operations Projects Coordinator, reporting for Jason Wiersbeke, Director of Public Works. Just one item for the general update here is that he is currently down at the pool right now working on some electrical issues. They're looking to have a drain pump they're trying to fix. and they are looking to have that pool open within the week.
Great.
And then I have my report if you'd like.
All right. Go ahead.
First item is the Lockwood Tower Road project. The base scope of work is complete. All the main objectives have been achieved there. Wall and road have been repaired, and the slope above the wall has been stabilized. We are getting some prices on some additional optional work, which would include paving the road up to the top and expanding the fire department turnaround up there. And I'll advise the board when I have that. Number two is the paver project. Moving to the final stage here, the blocks are being reset. Next will be surface grinding. I think we'll have an agenda item on that coming up. And then, of course, the last item will be the concrete ramp and fix for the curb there. Next item is the Station 72 apparatus building. We did receive bids on that project. We had two bids submitted, one of which was responsive. And it was, we feel, very high. So cost escalations are, of course, very common right now. We don't think value engineering is going to get us where we want to go. The staff is going to recommend that the board reject all bids and rescope that project. As a corollary to that, I was in Chicago for a design conference 2 weeks ago, and that is they're seeing 50% cost escalations across the board, across the country. And this would be post-award cost escalations, mainly related to materials availability. There's a lot of strategies out there right now being propounded by various agencies and municipalities to try and get around this, and I'll be paying a lot of attention to that and advising the board, as I know. Last item is the VMT Freight Depot. It is now currently ready for use as a venue. All the temporary work has been completed on the building. I have some just small finish cleaning to do this week, and then we have a grand opening with the county barbecue this Friday at 5:30. After crawling around in that building for a couple of months, I've made some pretty interesting and fun discoveries, so I'd be happy to share that with anybody who wants to come to the barbecue, and you can check out the historic building. And that's all I have for you, sirs.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioner Gilman, you have any questions for Mike?
No, thank you, Mike.
Vice Chairman?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks again, Mike. Moving right along to communications, Becky Parsons.
Becky Parsons with Communications Manager. The only thing I have to report is we will be full staff again come July 11th, and that's about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Moving on to emergency management, Laura Mather.
Good morning, Laura Mather for the record. Over the past several months, as I've talked about in previous meetings, we've been working very closely with the Porter Group. They have been assisting us through all of this federal funding that's coming out for the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. But over the past few months, we've been working very closely with them for community project funding. Now, this is what used to be called appropriations, and before that was called earmarks. So this is the federal funding that our congressional, our congressmen and senators are allowed to submit to the federal government for their recommendations on funding for projects within their jurisdictions. So each of the politicians is allowed to submit 15 projects. So this has been a really interesting process, and I realized I should have paid more attention in my government classes, but I've learned a lot through this process, and it's been great to get to know our political leaders, their staff, and to go through this process. So this is the second year, it's my understanding this is the second year in a row that this has been allowed to happen. Before last year, there was a bit of a lapse between the submittals. So we were notified the week before last that Senators Cortez Masto and Rosen, they pooled their projects together. We submitted a total of 6 projects to them for their approval. 5 of those 6 projects have been approved. So it's gone through the biggest lump, the biggest hurdle, and that is for the senators to approve it and to submit that as their formal project requests. So again, there's five projects. One of them will be going through housing and urban development. The other four will be going through the USDA. So we have the Lockwood Senior Center project, $2,500,000 grant that will go towards that project. Story County Fire Station 71, which is here in Virginia City, $3,750,000 will be going towards that project. The Lockwood Sheriff's Department substation, this will include either the upgrade or the replacement of that modular building. In addition, it's going to include a tower and fiber for better, faster internet. So it's going to really help out the Sheriff's Department and their staff, so when the deputies are downloading their body cam footage, it's not taking so long, it'll upload a lot quicker. In addition, because the tower is there, it will benefit the new senior center, the fire station, and basically that whole area will have better, faster internet because of this project. The next one is the Virginia City Fairgrounds upgrades. That is $615,000 that will go towards that project. That is going to install water, power to the fairgrounds. It's going to remodel some of the existing infrastructure, and it's also going to pave and correct the roads that are coming down into the fairgrounds. Then we have the Justice Center upgrades. That is $244,000. That's going to go to the installation of bollards to protect the building. It's going to include installation of lighting, the addition of pavement to the current parking lot, plus expanding that, and it's also going to add a driveway from the overgrade road to the Justice Center for additional egress. So the total for these five projects as far as grant funding is $7,934,000. That's going to allow us to do $12,245,000 worth of projects, with 65% of that cost being covered by grants. So we're very excited about that. So how this works, now, there is no 100% guarantee in anything, but it has passed, again, through the senators officially submitting that as their requests. It's passed through both the House and Senate committees, so the USDA committee, the HUD committee, they have approved these projects being submitted to them. The next step is it will go to the House floor in July. It'll be there, it meaning all of this funding will be there for about a week. Then it goes to the Senate floor for their vote and hopefully approval. Once it's passed by both, it will be added to the omnibus legislation as part of the federal budget. And then that federal budget, as we all know, is supposed to be passed by the end of September, but, you know, nobody's really thinking that's going to happen. But in our favor, this is a very important election year, so we're hoping that a lot of this stuff moves a lot quicker than it might normally move. So, again, working with the Porter Group, they expect it to pass by the end of this calendar year. So we're hoping this whole budget package passes the end of this calendar year. Once the federal budget has passed this funding, then it goes to the agencies that then distribute it. So our projects will go to HUD, to the USDA, and then they can disperse those funds as grant to the communities that receive these projects. So based on this information, we are hoping that we get the funding and we'll be able to start spending it in the spring. Because these are sort of, they're publicized projects, so, you know, everybody's really proud of these projects and wants to make it public on everything that is coming to the state of Nevada. We're going to have to move fairly quickly on these, so they are asking that we spend these funds and complete these projects within 1 year. Now, obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on with manpower, with getting stuff to complete projects. So we're just going to work really closely with these agencies as we go through this process and get it all hopefully completed within that year period. You know, as I mentioned, five of our six projects being approved and submitted, that's really a big deal for us. We're very proud of that. And it's been a really interesting process. So Senator Rosen had two of her staff who were from Washington, D.C. here in Nevada. So they came up, they met with Honey and myself and County Manager Osborne. And at the end of our meeting, they said, hey, can you show us around a little bit? And it was like, oh, game on. So we loaded them up in the truck and we took them on a tour of the community and we showed them the fairgrounds. We drove them by the Justice Center. One of the things that was really important to me was that they understand that we can handle these projects. So Story County can handle these large projects. I took them, Honey and I took them down. We showed them the new sewer facility in Gold Hill. We showed them the water tanks up on the hill. We showed them that we have completed these types of large projects. We are accustomed to working with the USDA Rural Development. We're good. We're good to go. We can handle this money. And then our final stop was at the fire station here in Virginia City. I called Chief Longcar, gave him a heads up. We're on our way. He had his staff ready to go for us, and they gave us a great tour of the building. So I feel it was really important that the senator's staff see our community, see what our projects are, understand our community and what our needs are. Both Honey and I worked at the Fourth Ward School Museum. With our experience there, we have a really good understanding of the history of the Comstock. So on our drive, we gave them a history lesson. So we talked about where Story County has been, how the county started, how important it was in the history of Nevada and the United States. We talked about the booms and the busts, where the county is now, and where we're going in the future. So that that tour, I think, was really important in the decisions on what projects they were going to submit, because we were, again, able to show them this is where we're at, and this is the great things that's going on. After a year of working on a grant with myself, Kathy Canfield, and Honey Menifee, we finally, after a year, received final okay, and yes, you can now start spending the money on the Long Valley Creek flood study. So we are receiving $187,500 for that flood study. What our goal is to have a contractor come in, do a new study, take old study data, compare it to that, compare it to what FEMA has designated as a flood zone in that area, take all of those and give us some plans, some ideas on how we mitigate that flooding that happens through that area. So we're hoping for various ideas that we can then implement once we can get the next round of funding to go towards that. It's going to include community involvement, so we will be meeting with the communities down there throughout this project so that they can have an input, they know what's going on, their ideas of how we can best protect that area. That is the end of my discussion on grant funding. COVID-19. We no longer receive daily or weekly number reports, so we don't receive the numbers as far as what our positivity rates are. The CDC has Story County remains as low. So the entire state of Nevada remains low except for Washoe County and Clark County. They are at medium level. I will have it on the next commissioner's meeting agenda to dissolve our declaration of emergency. So hopefully that, after that, I won't have to talk about COVID-19 anymore. That's the end of my report.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Laura?
No questions, comment. Thank you for that, Laura. I'll have some thoughts to share in a bit later in the meeting on the grant funding. I just got back from Alaska and the meeting with WIR. Fascinating things going on right now, and I'm delighted that we are ahead of the game. Having the Porter Group at our side is invaluable, and I would say that the next 5 years, there's some incredible opportunities coming our way. So I have some things that I'll, some handouts that I got while I'm up there that you might enjoy, kind of the punch list of what's coming out of Washington and NACO. But nice report, and it seems to me that we have some nice things to look forward to from our federal group. Yeah. M-State, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman Mitchell, anything?
Thank you, Laura.
I just want to say thank you. I know you and your team have been working hard to get that grant money in. I know a lot of these projects are greatly needed. So, again, thank you. I do see a hand raised from Nicole Bard. Nicole?
Yes. This is spectacular. Thank you very much. The question I have is, are water projects part of this particular grant cycle? And by that, I mean, in the Highlands, more and more, despite the fact that we've got the USGS monitoring our wells, our water table is still going down. And the entire western states are all in a drought scenario. So my question would be, is there, for next year perhaps, the opportunity to do a water project for the Highlands, such as building a water tower terminus down there by Loustown, whereby we can buy water to fill our cisterns?
I can answer when it comes to what we submitted for our six projects. The sixth project that was not approved was a water project. So water is at the top of our list, and any time we have an opportunity to submit a grant that is for a water project, that is number one. We were very vocal that was our number one out of the six projects, and that was the one that was not approved.
Awesome, please.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne for the record. I'll add on to that as well. We're in the midst of the Water Master Plan for all of South Story County, so that includes Highlands, Mark Twain, and Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Silver City in Lyon County. That master plan actually is on the agenda today to be amended, so I won't talk about it too much. But Nicola's, it's important. The master plan really is the basis from which a lot of this grant money that Laura's talking about will be able to be sought and tied into something that's actually measurable. So I welcome any questions that come up when we talk about that amendment to the master plan a little bit later in the agenda, but hopefully that at least gives you an idea where we're going there. Thank you.
Can I add one more thing?
Nope. Yeah.
So one of the things that I have found very interesting as we're going through this process of federal funding, and again, it's been quite the learning experience, is when this federal funding first started coming out, it was very specific to COVID-19 response and water. What we are seeing is that the agencies that do allow for organizations to request funding for grants for water projects, they are overwhelmed. And Honey will talk about this a little bit in her staff report, but what we're seeing is, as we all know, in the western United States, we're in a 20-year drought. Water is a major concern. So these agencies are being overwhelmed with requests for water projects. So that's something I think we all need to keep in mind as we go through this process.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Speaking of Honey, Community Relations, Honey Menifee.
Good morning, Honey Menifee, for the record. Before I go into the water and more grant funding, the Desert Research Institute, we have come up here several times over the past few months in these meetings and talked about the smoke monitoring, that they are going to be putting monitors throughout the county to just kind of get data from the wildfire smoke that comes into the area. And so we had a survey out a few months ago where different members of the county participated in that, and they started the dialogue with us and our residents. Currently, they have a questionnaire that is online. It was put online on our social media accounts about a week ago, and it's going to be open for another 2 weeks. And it's for the county residents, anyone 18 or older, and they don't ask for any personal information. They're just trying to gather data relating to your opinions on the, how smoke impacts life here So there will be a monitor that's put in Lockwood, there will be a monitor in the Highlands, and there will be a monitor here between here and Gold Hill, kind of on the divide. But this questionnaire is just to further their information and get ready for the data that starts coming in when they implement the monitors. There are also paper versions that have been distributed. They're at the senior centers in Lockwood and here in Virginia City, and there are also paper copies at the library here in Virginia City. Those will be available until June 21st, the paper copies. They got distributed a few days after all the things were posted online. So if anyone would like to complete that, like again, it can be either done completed online, takes about 15 minutes, or can paper copies could be picked up from the three areas I mentioned. So before I get into one of the major grants we had applied for, another aspect to the water project is Far West has been working on our behalf, and they have submitted priorities that we have in the county. There are six or seven priority water projects that have been put on the list with the NDEP, and a couple of them are being very closely monitored and will be worked with. The NDP is waiting for the funding to come out and the notice of fundings to become available, and they have projects that they think are going to be very well in line with what is being looked for as far as projects are concerned, like lead water siphon replacements and things like that. Any lead is a big, it's high on their priority list. So that will all be coming down the pike, and you know, we've got everything in line preparing for those fundings that will be coming out. Regarding the economic adjustment assistance grant application that I had submitted to the Economic Development Authority back a few months ago, I had spoken about that briefly here. It was for our Comstock District Water Project, and this was a grant that was made possible through the American Rescue Plan Act funding. And as Laura said, all this funding came out due to the economic distress that was caused by COVID. And so a lot of the infrastructure projects were created to, or the applications, they were created to boost local economies. And so the focus of this grant was on the creation and retention of jobs. But the main focus for the grant was on the creation of jobs that would be long-standing that could stimulate the local economies. So I submitted our application, and it was a request for $5,371,000, roughly, for this project. And I submitted it at the end of February. And that was 1 month ahead of the original deadline that the EDA had put out. The original deadline was March 31st. But in the middle of February, I'd gotten an email saying that the funds were running out and to get our grant application in as soon as possible. This particular grant, I received notification about 2 weeks ago, was more than four times oversubscribed. So that means that more than four times the amount of funding requests were submitted in comparison with how much money was available. Dozens of the businesses here in Virginia City and Gold Hill, they submitted letters of support on this project's behalf. And I just want to thank all of them for this community involvement. Originally, I had given them a deadline of about a month to get the letters in, but then when I found out the application had to be turned in sooner, it was down to a matter of days. Like I said, dozens of businesses submitted those for us. Along with those letters of support, I acquired letters of support from Senators Rosen and Cortez Masto's offices. And despite these efforts, due to the nature that our project would retain the current jobs that were already, you know, that are already established in the community, they would not create long-standing jobs. They were looking for the creation of long-term jobs, but because this would only create jobs during the construction period, I got a letter yesterday saying that this was not in alignment with their evaluation criteria. So we made it through like four rounds of review process, but then it got to the final board, and due to the nature of the over asking for money, ours was not in high priority due to that criteria. So We are not getting that funding from the EDA for the Comstock Water Project. However, that doesn't have to mean it's the end of this project. We already have the preliminary engineering report done and the environmental assessment, and there are further grants coming down the line, so we can continue to apply for those in this capacity because, as I said, all the background work has been done. No further money will be expended on the, you know, for those for this particular project. So that's it for now, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Honey. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Honey?
No questions. Thank you, Honey.
Chairman Mitchell?
Thank you.
Thank you again for your report. Moving right along to the VCTC, Linda Ritter. Gentlemen.
Morning.
It's
time for, as Mike said, had mentioned, it's time for the county barbecue this Friday, and we are starting at 5:30, and it is an unveiling of the Freight Depot, and we are excited about this new venue that we're going to be able to put into use. We're going to do a ribbon cutting at 6 o'clock, and we're looking to have a very, very good time. We are offering a bus transportation for those in Lockwood, and we are picking everybody up at 5:15 from Lockwood. We will start back down the hill at 8 o'clock. We have a school bus. The school district was kind enough to work with us to do that. And so far, we've just got 10 signed up, so there's room for more. So I want to encourage anybody in Lockwood that wants a ride to the barbecue, call 847-7500 or email visitorinfo@visitvirginiacity.org and hitch a ride up. And that's my report.
Thank you, Linda. Commissioner Gilman, anything for Linda?
You bet.
Nothing, thank you. Keep working on filling that bus. It would be nice. We just need to keep the word out there. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
No, thank you.
All right. Comptroller McCain?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Do we have anything from the assessor's office? Janice Eden?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry about that. Working with my left hand is a little difficult hitting the mute button. This morning, you guys approved on the consent agenda two corrections for our business personal property, and I appreciate that. Thank you. But I also wanted to just kind of give you guys a heads up. Coming in the next couple of meetings, you're probably going to see quite a few more. This is another fallout of COVID, where we weren't really reaching out, trying to collect back taxes and stuff from companies that we thought were still in business. We just weren't hearing from them. The way personal property works is you send them a declaration. If they don't return it per statute, we put an estimate and a penalty on and send them a bill. They are supposed to sign a declaration, send it back, and say they are out of business. Unfortunately, we didn't know through COVID if people were working from home, not receiving these declarations, or were out of business. Didn't really have a whole lot of way of contacting them. Now businesses are actually back and maybe working or checking their mails. They're returning these things saying we've been out of business for a year, 2 years, or we're still just not getting any information, but there are no active business licenses. So we are going to be cleaning up these accounts. We will have an explanation on each one that comes through. Again, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up about what's probably coming within the next couple of meetings. And other than that, I don't have anything else. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Jana. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for our assessor?
I do not. Thanks, Jana.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Jana, I was just curious about the one that we approved earlier. There was some involvement with Washoe County, and is that something that's easy to explain? We could certainly, I can take the question offline if it's a little more complex. I don't need to spend a lot of time.
That is a very good question. We have, as you well know, the industrial park for years has had an issue. Even though we now have a new zip code, people still are using like the old zip code. or they're still looking at and pulling up and they think it's Washoe County. So many of these businesses look up, look at the address and go, oh, that's Washoe County, and they report their assets to Washoe County. As you know, Washoe County is big, and we process business personal property all year long, all the way up, and we can bill up to April 30th of each year for our business personal property. So as Washoe County is going through and processing and looking at their declarations, when they see a declaration and they go, oh, all these assets are in the industrial park, this goes to Story County. So they'll send us the declaration. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little confused about the one that we had because we processed exactly what was on that declaration. They came back and said, we don't have anything in Story County. When we explained what was going on, they were like, oh, okay, well, now that's an incorrect declaration. So I am unsure if some of this stuff was actually in Washoe County and some of it was in Story and they split it. But Washoe told us that all the assets were in Story County based on the location that they had listed on the declaration. But they, like I said, they came back and said, no, that's not correct. These are the actual items that we have in Story County. So until we do an audit, probably through TMA, we honestly are kind of at the mercy of the businesses to let us know what's there.
Great.
They were very adamant that all that stuff that we billed for was not in Story County.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for clearing that up.
All right. Thank you again for your update, Jenna.
Thank you.
We're going to jump back to the fire department.
Good morning, Tiffany Pretty here on behalf of Chief Longcard. Our only update is that we'll be hosting an open house this Saturday, the 11th, from 9:30 to 12:30 p.m. at all four of our stations for anyone that's interested in taking tours or learning more about the fire district.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gilman, do you have any questions for Tiffany
regarding
the open house? Vice Chairman?
Tiffany, that was at all fire stations?
Yes, sir, at all four of our fire stations, Virginia City, the Highlands, Lockwood, and the Industrial Park.
Great. And the time again, the start time?
The start time will be 9:30 through 12:30 p.m.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the update, Tiffany.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the Planning Department, Kathy Canfield.
Good morning. So I wanted just to give you an update. At the last meeting, we talked about the election signs. That will be heard at the Planning Commission meeting next Thursday, June 16th. Because of the timing and what that topic is related per NRS, we have to notice in the newspaper, and so the timing didn't work to get it onto this agenda. So we will be talking about that at the Planning Commission meeting, and then anticipating the next available board meeting will bring what the discussion was. The second item I have is on Tuesday, June 21st, which is 2 weeks from today, in the evening at Piper's Opera House, we're having the kickoff meeting for the Virginia City Six Mile Canyon Drainage Study. That is a grant that we received through the Carson Water Subconservancy District, and it's looking at the drainage impacts of Virginia City and Six Mile Canyon. If you remember, we recently did one with the Dayton Valley area, the Mark Twain neighborhood. This is upstream of that and kind of looking at the impacts that Virginia City has in that the drainage patterns. So it will be... I think the doors open at 5 o'clock. The actual discussion will start at 5:30. It will be a brief discussion by our consultant who's doing the work, and then there's a lot of interaction that's requested from the participants to walk around, look at maps, mark on maps, talk to the people about issues in areas where they see drainage problems happening. Carson Water Subconservancy will also be there with some of their models water models. So it's a real interactive type of a thing. So it's more of a participate, not just sit and listen kind of a thing. So there's postcards that are going out to the property owners that are within Virginia City and Six Mile Canyon. Just because they get a postcard, everybody's welcome to attend, but they're just sending direct invitations to people that are actually in the area where the drainage study will occur. So, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that as it comes up.
Commissioner Gilman?
No,
do you have any questions? Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
Right. Kathy, what was the date on that again?
2 weeks from today, June 21st.
Great. Thank you. Moving right along to the recorder's office. Marnie Anson Martinez.
Nothing to report today.
All right. Thank you. How about from our IT department? James on the phone?
Good morning, Commissioners. James Dean, Story County IT Director. A couple of quick updates. The website is coming along on the back end. We've been having staff, Riley and Melissa, go around to the department heads doing current updates so that when we do the cutover, which is looking like September, it'll be a smooth process. So that's happening. You're not seeing a lot, but there's a lot going on in the background. Like I said, looking for a September cutover to have a nice fresh look on the website. And then also the tower at the sewer treatment plant in Six Mile Canyon has been completed. The electrical circuits have been run from the facility up to the tower, as well as a 12-strand fiber. So the tower is 100% operational, and as we move into the next fiscal year, we'll start moving multiple microwave radio shots to that tower, and it should help to augment Jason Wersbicki's SCADA system and all kinds of plans for infrastructure there. So that's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for James?
Nothing. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell? Thanks. All right. Thanks again for that update. Human Resources, Jeannie Green.
Thank you. Just one item, a reminder that the county is observing Juneteenth on Monday, June 20th this year. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeannie. Community Development, Pete Renaud.
Good morning, Commissioners. Pete Renaud for the record. Real quick here, just a little update on some more building permits. Just in the last couple of weeks since I've last reported, we have 47 active single family residence permits in the VC area, Highlands, and Mark Twain. Also on top of that, there's 11 pending for review. The majority of those have the cart before the horse. They don't have wells, they don't have septics, that type of thing. Also, just another reminder to the residents that we're taking plan review over the counter. Everything except for single-family residence permits right now. And that's my report.
Thank you, Pete. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Pete?
No, Pete, just a thank you for all that great work, organization, and streamlining our county processes. It really benefits Story County, and thank you for all that pre-planning and extra work. Appreciate it a lot.
Absolutely.
Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks again for that update, Pete. Moving on to Community Chest. Michael Ann, do you have anything for us?
Good morning. I am Michael Ann Lazzarino, the Deputy Director for Community Chest. And we just wanted to give a quick update on the expansion of our youth programs that we've seen now that everything is back open after COVID. We are so grateful we were able to recruit and hire enough staff to fully open our summer program at the community center. And we have a record enrollment this summer of about 90 children enrolled and about 60 children attending daily. Those are elementary and middle school youth. And as well as our early childhood center, it is at max capacity. We were just able to hire an additional staff to increase our numbers to 24 2 to 5-year-olds, and we still have 13 on the wait list. And we are in the process of opening an infant center for about 6 weeks to 2 years old. And We are hoping to be open around the end of summer, and we're thinking about we'll be able to be licensed for about 8 infants, and we already have a full wait list for that as well. So we are working to fill as much need for the youth, but there seems to be tons of it lately. So that is it.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for my client?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Let's jump to the Fourth Ward School. Nora.
Good morning, Nora Steffel for the record. Thank you for having me today. I think the Fourth Ward School Museum at this point is moving forward with our opening season. We've done a couple of great events the last few months. The public comes and visit us. I mean, we're open 7 days a week. Our events, we promote our culture, and our main goal is to bring the community and tourism, or the community neighborhoods, into the museum to understand the building, how important it is, and also our Comstock culture. So, and I've seen like great people, I mean, through our events, we've been sold out, and people are very interested of our museum and what we promote. Second of all, in the last year, we had applied for the Nevada Humanities Grant, and we got 2 grants. One was the operating grant and the rescue grant to promote activities, to promote actually the museum. One of our projects was to enhance education for fourth graders for Nevada history. So we have a YouTube channel that I've shared in the past, but with the humanities grant, the operating grant, which was $5,000, we created the autobiography of Sarah Winnemucca in 3 series of animation. Anybody can go and see that. We, through our school tours, we promote that for all the teachers, the Nevada, Northern Nevada teachers, and hopefully that can go through the whole state of Nevada. The second project that, or humanities grant that we applied, was the rescue grant, and it was about to promote a digital tour of the museum. So we are in the process of creating that, so anybody can go and do a digital tour through the whole exhibits and learn about our history. So that's in the process. Hopefully will be done by October, and it's going to be pretty neat going to, you know, seeing the museum in 3D. So I'll have more information down the road on that. We, moving on to our events and how we advertise our museum, we have a great relationship with Colo 8 Channel News. Actually, yesterday I was there at the station and promoted the Kids Fair that is coming up this coming Saturday. And basically, through last year and this year, we tried to collaborate with our nonprofits, cultural nonprofits here in Virginia City. So the event, it's about kids. It's about teaching Comstock science and Comstock history with interactive crafts. So we're having this year, many nonprofits are participating, and the community as well. Even like the Story County Sheriffs will be there for us this year, which is great because even tourists can see what we promote and how important is our culture and history of Comstock. So that's like, this is coming up like I said, Saturday, June 11th. It's free for kids and parents. You know, we are always, it would be great, you know, to pay the admissions, or another way is to donate for the museum, because everything goes into the museum to be able to promote all those things that we're trying to do. Our last event, but the coming event after the Kids' Fair is going to be the 4th of July event. We're going to open our balconies again this year, and it's going to be limited seating, so pretty much it's who comes first to buy tickets for that event. And I will have more upcoming, actually more news when on our website and social media. And let's see if I'm forgetting anything. Unfortunately, I lost my maintenance handyman at the museum, so I'm looking for a new handyman. I will definitely would like somebody from this community, and I'm just putting the word out if anybody wants to come and have this position. Either can reach me at the Fourth Ward, and I think that's it.
All right. Thank you, Nora.
Thank
Commissioner
you.
Gilman, do you have any questions for Nora?
I don't, Nora. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you again, Nora. Senior Center, Stacy York.
Good morning, Stacy York, for the record. I just have a couple events and dates that are coming out. So in Lockwood, this Saturday, June 11th, they are doing a community yard sale from 8 to 3. Then next weekend, they're having their second annual car show and parade where a barbecue is provided. That's June 18th, 10 to 2. Then up here in Virginia City, we are starting Tai Chi for seniors at the Silverland. It'll start this Monday, June 13th from 10 to 11, and will run Mondays and Wednesdays. And the next vaccine clinic we will be having up here in Virginia City is Wednesday, June 22nd, 3 to 4 p.m. And that is it.
Thank you, Stacy. Any questions, Commissioner Gilman?
No, thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Moving right along to the DA's office.
Nothing to report today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. County Manager, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Commissioners. Austin Osborne for the record. Just a couple things. We're still actively recruiting for our economic development director person, so we'll keep working on that. We're going to bring the capital improvement plan that this board has approved back to all of us to review again for the next coming year, and a lot of folks are talking about extra things that we should have in that document, so we'll put those in there and then bring it back to this board for consideration through a workshop. And then if the board wants to take action, then we'll bring it back for action as well. And that would be between now and 2030 and maybe even 2031. Just a reminder that we are hosting the Nevada Association of Counties annual conference here in Virginia City. The VCTC and Public Works have been working around the clock to try to get prepared for that. And part of the itinerary will be to have a tour out at the Industrial Center. We're working with Tesla right now to either, depending on the size of the group, to get some type of a site tour out there and discussion. And then we'll do a circuit out there on a large, like an Amador bus type of format. And that'll be in September. And then just a reminder that we are, with Linda Ritter's leadership, taking the strategic plan to the communities this summer to get community input on where we think we should go in that direction, then we'll bring that back to the board as well. That's all I have.
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for
the dates of September?
I'll look at that again. I think it's the first or second week of September. I'll get right back with you and just send that to you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
No, thank you.
Thanks, okay. Austin. Thank you. Last but never least, County Clerk, Doreen Evan.
Doreen Evan, with pleasure for the record. Just a quick reminder that early voting ends this Friday at 6 o'clock in the Slammer. And another reminder is we do have voting centers, especially with this road construction. You can go to any polling place. within Story County, if you're a Story County resident. So I just wanted to remind
you. Nice. Until Friday?
On election day.
On election day.
Yeah, but yeah, on election day is the voting centers. But
gotcha. All right.
We only have early voting up here right now.
Thank you very much. All right. Back to our regularly scheduled agenda. We are at board comment. I'm going to start at my far left. Commissioner Gilman, is there anything you'd like to talk about today?
Please, I'd like to share some information that I've enjoyed here recently. First of all, I want to reach out to Laura and Honey. You know, with great respect, you guys, the work that you've done on grants and the complicated environment that the federal government creates for us, it's just, it's wonderful, the success you've had and the understanding you bring it. I know that the Porter Group helped us a lot, but I have a feeling most folks have no idea the challenge that you all are facing and the successes you've had in bringing that kind of revenue into our county. I recently became very much aware that small counties in the nation have a very difficult time availing themselves of all of the support that might come out of Washington, only because we're staffed as small counties so that we really don't have the personnel to do all the review and all the analysis and all the paperwork and all the grinding that you have to do to get it out there to make it happen. And that's a real challenge for small counties. So my thought here is you guys have made something that's incredibly complicated very successful, and that's due to a lot of personal efforts, and I thank you for that. I wanted to take a few minutes, if I may, this morning. I had the pleasure and the enjoyment of going up to Alaska on behalf of the county, and that's not all bad duty, by the way. Such a beautiful state up there, and we were treated to probably the finest weather they've had in Alaska in the last 50 years. It was clear, no wind, and it was absolutely beautiful. So I want to reflect a little bit on what we're doing and what that means to the county when we travel and we invest our time in those kind of things. We in this room often refer to NACO, and that's the National Association of Counties. And the National Association of Counties represents every county in the United States and primarily are focused in watching Washington, D.C., watching all the legislation and all the bills and all the unfunded mandates and everything else that can slide down the slide at us out of Washington. And somebody has to watch all the bills and have all the input and visit and lobby and do the things that are necessary to watch that umbrella over the top of us, this giant gorilla in the room called Washington, D.C. And they can do a lot of things to us that are unfortunate if you don't have a watchdog group. Then, after you talk about NACO, we have what's called our Nevada NACO. And that's an additional set of responsibilities, meetings. And Nevada NACO, yes, we all join in on the national, federal level and have all of our meetings and boards and things that go along with the national. But also, we do that very same thing here in the state. So Nevada NACO is responsible for watching what happens down in Carson City. And during the legislative process, watch every bill that goes through and how it might impact our county. Again, unfunded mandates are very challenging, difficult, and expensive for us. So you have your Nevada NACO. And what I attended for us here in Washington, D.C. was what's called WIR. WIR is the Western group of about 15 Western states. So we all feel like here in the West, maybe we aren't really focused on with the same problem that they're having back in Washington, D.C. or in the Midwest. So that particular group focuses on everything that is important and might affect our Western region. My apologies, I'm going to read from some notes here, but each association serves as the county's advocates for the public policy with the federal and the state oversight. There's monitoring of all legislation, bill oversight, and focused lobbying at all levels. Very, very important for us. And I've had the pleasure of doing that over the last 10 years. So it's been a it's been an interesting funding. The WIR, which is the Western Group, they concentrate and they include all of the counties from the 15 Western states and their issues that affect Western interests. The conference included the election of the officers for the fiscal year 22-23. That was in Alaska for WIR. The three-day program included a lot of steering committees, a lot of board meetings, and there was a broad selection and cross-section of educational workshops that we could all attend, share concepts. I met with Hawaii and some of the issues. We were with the folks from Arizona and had some interesting challenges. A lot of them we all face of a similar nature, but others are site-specific to their particular state or county. We were looking at a lot of the small community financing and technical assistance that can be available both from the federal and the state level and how we can avail ourselves of those. One of the challenges is just realizing they're out there. Again, the prospects of working at the federal level or even the state and with a smaller county, challenging. And so trying to just identify the information and the help that might be out there is a challenge of its own. We also talk about navigating the American Rescue Plan. More to come on that. Tourism and the economy, what to do about that. The federal session with the U.S. Department of Interior and U.S. Forest Service. PILT came up. You know, that's our payments for managing all of the federal lands and the impacts that we have on the federal infrastructures. A lot of the nationwide marketing insights, and that that kind of came key information from Nationwide, who works nationwide as a economic advisor, if you will, to NACO. Very interesting. Just a couple of quick side comments. Yeah, the recession is coming. It's going to be deep. It's going to be heavy. It's going to come with a lot of financial impacts, perhaps a lot more to others than Story County. It was suggested that Story County is in a pretty unique position right now in weathering something like a recession, because so many of the companies that we have here that have joined us are somewhat recession-proof. They're self-funded, self-financed, and they all represent industries that are really the growth industries of the future. And so we're talking about data storage, and we're talking about electric cars, and we're talking about batteries, and we're talking about so much of the industry that has joined us here over the last 10 years. And as a matter of fact, worthwhile noting that there's a lot of grants available to us in some of those areas, like electric cars and batteries and things. So that might be something that we'll focus on as we come in the future. However, we are going to have to look at recessionary and perhaps even depressionary things. It was not a very pretty picture, if you will, that they painted on what's coming at our nation financially. And the other thing that prepared for is that the social unrest and the criminality that is growing in our nation today, for the foreseeable future, it is suggested that is not only going to continue, but it's going to get more impactful and worsen. And so talking about our policing and our police station and maybe adding some support, it is anticipated that our nation is going to have to endure some serious criminal elements and impacts, and that's can't be denied at this point. The major focus area, if you will, was the overview of the U.S. Treasury, the final rule area for fiscal recovery and the funds, and that would become from the American Rescue and Fund. It's the final rule, and I have a booklet I'm going to share, Laura. I'll give that to you afterwards. The American Rescue Plan Act, it became law in March 11th of 2021. There was $350 billion with the program. $65.1 billion would be in direct aid for all county governments in the impact that they had during COVID, and how that's going to be administered and allocated. And it's a complicated program, but there has been a review of that recently that came out. And so, not that the rules have changed, but they've been augmented, they've been amended, there's more opportunity there, and of course it's all from the federal level. The first rule went into effect on April the 1st of 2022, so it's all brand new, and folks like the Porter Group will be getting acquainted with it. We should be getting acquainted with it, but there's the probability that there's some financial participation for us in all of this, and it's quite a you could spend a long time in school trying to internalize all of this stuff. What it's going to do is it's going to allow the counties to use formula allowances. It's based under treasury formulas as revenue losses from the production of general government servicing. And I think we've already looked at that somewhat. It's not new business for us. But this new rule that just came out in April changes those dynamics. So in addition to that, there was supplemental information with a breakdown of the federal infrastructure funding available to counties today. And the president signed the $1 trillion legislation on November the 15th, fairly recent, 2021. It was called the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That's what you've been working under with the Porter Group. And this is a five-year program, so it's rather recent. Brand new, and that is going to create dozens of new grant programs that counties can use, and they'll be funded directly. But Laura, I'll share this with you. It's interesting. You may have already seen something like this, but it gives you a breakdown of so many of the grants and so many of the agencies that you are going to work with. You know, you were mentioning who you had to go to, but you're talking about USDA, Department of Commerce, Department of Energy, Health and Human Services, Department of Homeland Security, Department of the Interior, Department of Transportation, the Environmental Protection Agency. All of those agencies are going to be issuing over the next 5 years grants to assist counties with various infrastructure programming. So tremendous amount of money available, and you were already on it. So with the Porter Group and what you guys are doing, it's rewarding and... To be sure, these federal programs are very complicated. They're labor-intensive, and so you're going to have a lot of work cut out for you. But the good news is our leadership has chosen to associate with the Washington, D.C.-based Porter Group. And by the way, I had the opportunity to go one-on-one with those folks. They were really instrumental in gaining the opportunity zones for Story County that we were left out of during the last presidential administrative group. And so now we have become, really, because the Porter Group and a lot of other folks, I mean, I could spend way too much telling you involved in that, but we became ozone compliant. Their organization and leadership has resulted in professional results in navigating the D.C. Minefields. Their oversight will prove invaluable as we pursue all these federal programs that I've just suggested are out there. I must tell you that I have so appreciated and enjoyed representing Story County at NACO Nevada and at WIR. The past 10 years, I've had trips to Washington, multiple. I've met with all of our folks. You know, Mark Amaday's name hasn't come up, but what a great congressman he is, and of course Senator Rosen and Cortez Masos, and it just goes on and on and on. But generally, we have a very responsive leadership group in Washington. They're very aware of Story County, and they visited us on multiple occasions. They've been through all of our retail. They've been through all of our industrial, and we're on their radar screen. So all of these for my part have been personal efforts and time invested, but with the professional support and the guidance of our Nevada Association of Counties, with our guidance of NACO, with our guidance of our staff, with our guidance of local NACO programs, we've really enjoyed, I think, as a county, a successful path, if you will, maybe far beyond even some of the other counties that we share the state of Nevada with. So I thank you for the opportunity to represent us, and I think there's some really wonderful things in our future. And thank you for all the efforts.
Truly appreciate the update, Lance.
My pleasure.
And I think I speak for both Commissioner Mitchell and I that appreciate you taking one for the team and going up there to Alaska. So
I'm in my final I will term out this year, so I'm going to be passing this baton along, and you boys have a lot of fun coming up in the future.
I think it's a hot potato, maybe not
it's,
a baton.
It'll be a lot of fun.
But we do seriously appreciate it, because there's a ton of info at NACO, both locally and
pleasure. You'll enjoy it.
National level, so thank you.
My pleasure.
Vice Chairman, anything?
Just two short things. I know the Saturday is going to be awfully busy with the open house, the fire district, and the kids' fair, and the community yard sale down in Lockwood. There will also be a community trash pickup here in Virginia City. And so that'll start at 9 in the morning. Bring your gloves, bring your walking shoes, trash grabbers, off-road vehicles if you got them. 9 o'clock down at the fairgrounds. What's that?
Who's doing that?
VCTC and the Motorcycle Club, if I got my acronyms correct.
Nice.
So anyone who wants to join in, I'm going to make my kids do it in my stead. No, I'm just kidding. I should be there. I mean, that's why you have kids, right? You feed them all these years, you might as well get something out of
that's
it.
That's right.
And the other thing that I wanted to mention is I just wanted to acknowledge our chairman's birthday and wish him a happy birthday. He's looking pretty good for 39 again. He's holding strong, so that's it.
Much appreciated. I don't have any comments today, so we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 9. This is discussion for possible action. I'm sure Mr. Collins has been waiting a nice long time for this one. consideration and possible approval of variance 2022-14 by applicant James Collins, a request to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a primary residence and to allow for a dwelling construction on a parcel of land not served by a 50-foot right-of-way or a 24-foot wide traveled way. The applicant proposes a 15-foot yard setback from Howard Street and to be accessed by an existing traveled way less than 24 feet in width. The property is located at 336 North Howard Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number APN 001-033-03 and is identified as Lot 8A of Block 22, shown on Record of Survey Map 136-112, recorded in the office of the Story County Recorder on May 3rd, 2022. Take it away.
All right, thank you. Kathy Canfield for the record. So this is a variance request for, to reduce the front yard setback and also to be able to construct on a parcel that has less than 50-foot width right-of-way. The property is located at 336 North Howard Street, and Howard Street in this location had been platted as less than 50-foot right-of-way. The project itself is a new single-family dwelling, and will utilize that existing access. I've spoken with the Fire Protection District, and the access to the site is adequate for their regulations. The applicant's requesting the reduction in the front yard setback so that the house can be pulled up a little bit and you can have pedestrian access around it instead of being built back into the back slope. notices were sent out to the adjacent property owners. We did have one property owner contact us with just interested in what the project was. They didn't have any concerns. And this project itself was heard at the May 19th Planning Commission meeting. There was no public that commented on the project at that time. No concerns were identified, and the Planning Commission voted 5-0 to recommend approval. We had two absent that day. So staff and the Planning Commission are recommending approval of the variances.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. That's it? That's all you got?
That's all I have. I can answer questions, and Mr. Collins is also here if you have questions.
Great. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about this?
I do not. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman?
No, I don't either.
All right. Is there any public comment about this request? Not seeing any. Kathy, would you read the findings, please?
Yes, the findings of fact for the motion for approval This variance, file 2022-14, is to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a primary residence and to allow for dwelling construction on parcel of land not served by a 50-foot right-of-way or a 25-foot wide travelway. The applicant proposes a 15-foot front yard setback from Howard Street and be accessed by an existing travelway less than 24 feet in width. The property is located at 336 North Howard Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number APN 001-033-03 and is identified as lot 8A of block 22, shown on the record of survey map 136112, recorded in the office of Story County Recorder on May 3rd, 2022. The subject property is located within an R1 residential zoning in which single family residents are an allowed use. That because of special circumstances applicable to the subject property, including shape, size, topography, or location of surroundings, the strict application of the zoning ordinance would deprive the subject property of privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity or other identical zone classification. That the granting of the variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of substantial property rights of the applicant. That the granting of the variance will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons residing or working in the area of the subject property and will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to property or improvements in the area of the subject property. The proposed variance is in compliance with all federal and Nevada state and Story County regulations. The proposed variance is in compliance with Story County Code 1703.140, variances, and 17.12, general provisions, and 17.16, R1, residential zone, when all conditions of approval are met. The proposed variance is in compliance with and supports the goals, objectives, and policies of the 2016 Story County Master Plan.
Thank you, Kathy. Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah. In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission, the findings of fact under Section 3A of this report and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners and in compliance with the conditions of approval, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve variance file 2022-14 to allow for a reduced front yard setback to construct a primary residence and to allow for dwelling construction on a parcel of land not served by a 50-foot right-of-way or a 24-foot wide traveled way. The applicant proposes a 15-foot yard front yard setback from Howard Street and be accessed by an existing travelway less than 24 feet in width. The property is located at 336 North Howard Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number APN 001-033-03 and is identified as lot 8A of block 22, shown on a record of survey map 136112, recorded in the office of the Story County Recorder on May 3rd, 2022.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Congratulations, Mr. Collins. Thank you, Kathy. Moving right along to item number 10, this discussion for possible action. Presentation by the Nevada Rural Housing Authority about rural affordable home purchase programs and discussion and consideration for approval, resolution number 22-651, providing for the transfer of Story County's 2022 private activity bond volume cap to the NRHA for the purpose of providing first-time homebuyer down payment and other affordable housing assistance and other related matters.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Morning.
For the record, Mishon Hurst, M-I-S-H-O-N-H-U-R-S-T. I'm the Deputy Executive Director with Nevada Rural Housing Authority, and today I'm here to give you an update on previous transfers of the private activity bond cap, what we've used it for in the past, how it benefits our local community, and answer any questions and formally request the transfer of any unused private activity bond cap for 2022. So Nevada Rural Housing Authority and started the Home at Last program, also known as HAL, back in 2006. And Story County has been supporting that program by transferring any unused private activity bond cap since then. Since the inception of our program, we've utilized those funds to fund home ownership programs, providing down payment assistance, tax credit savings to home buyers, and home buyer education. In Story County, since 2006, we have the private activity bond cap transfer has benefited $1.9 million in affordable mortgages just in Story County alone. We've had 108 Story County home buyers receive $23.1 million in affordable loans, $698,000 in down payment assistance, and $360,000 in tax savings through the Mortgage Credit Certificate Program. All of that's made possible through the transfer of the private activity bond cap. The state allocates private activity bond cap to each of the local jurisdictions for public use, and any if it is not used by the local jurisdictions, it reverts back to the state. When it reverts back to the state, commonly those unused funds are distributed to Washoe County and Clark County because they have the highest need. We're requesting the transfer of your unused private activity bond cap so we can keep those funds in our rural communities. The Nevada Rural Housing Authority serves the 15 rural counties of Nevada, that's excluding Washoe and Clark County. And our home buyer programs benefit only communities with populations less than 150,000. And so I would be happy to answer any questions you have today.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions?
No, just to thank you. It's a wonderful program. It's been so helpful to so many. And I'm delighted you're here.
Thank you.
You have my support.
Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell.
Yeah, no questions. Thanks. Thanks very much for continuing to serve our residents.
Thank you.
And I echo the same sentiments. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman, would you like to entertain a motion?
Yeah. Hi, Commissioner Mitchell. Move to approve resolution number 22651, providing for the transfer of Story County's 2022 private activity bond volume cap to the Nevada Rural Housing Authority for the purpose of providing first-time home buyer down payment and other affordable housing assistance and other related matters.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, and keep
Thank
up
you.
The great work.
Thank you so much.
Moving right along to item number 12. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-644, granting the historic Fourth Ward School Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $120,000 for the purpose of preserving the historic Fourth Ward School Museum, a county-owned building, and for the purpose of preserving the Fourth Ward School Building, and for promoting the history of the Comstock and Story County. Laura.
Laura Mather, for the record. Before Honey steps up and goes through all of these agenda items for support for the nonprofits, I wanted to give a little refresher and a little bit of explanation on how we're handling them this year. So if you remember, one of the things that Story County wanted to be very specific about is that the county is responsibly funding nonprofit organizations within the county. So one of the 101s of nonprofit management is to have a very diverse funding source. So it would actually be irresponsible for Story County to say overfund a particular nonprofit because, again, as Commissioner Gilman talked about, we have, you know, a rocky road coming with how the economy is going to go. So we presented a while ago to the board that Story County would not fund more than 50% of a 501c3's overall operating budget. So with that, we were going to, if a nonprofit who was receiving funding from Story County was over that amount, we would decrease it by 10% a year until they were under that amount. We wanted to gradually do it, not to put anybody into a state of shock. However, how we create that amount is based off an organization's what's called a 990. So depending on what type of 501c3 you are and how much your budget is, there are various types of 990s that you complete, kind of like we do with our personal taxes. So how our budget works and how we need to be ready for it, we submit we notify the nonprofits that we would have, so I'm going to use this year as an example. So for a 22-23 budget, they would have had to provide us their 990s this January.
for. So because this January they were still working on their 2021 990s, we would be requesting the 990 from 2020. So we would be getting the 990s from these organizations from probably one of the worst years they've ever had. So with that, the request that Honey is going to present to you, do not take that 10% decrease into consideration. So we felt it was better not to do that based on 2020, which again for many of the organizations is going to be a really bad year. So she's going to present those agenda items. She'll let you know who's requesting the same amount, who's requesting more. But I thought it was really important that we understand that, you know, we've all struggled through this pandemic, particularly certain nonprofits trying to fundraising in 2020 was going to be really difficult for them. So we will hopefully, we continue to do, the economy continues to do well for a while, we will start that 10% decrease for any nonprofits who have that overage at next year's request. Can I answer any questions if you guys have any? Is that legal?
Question. So I know that some of the nonprofits that we provide funding for also are, for lack of a better term, caretakers of county facilities. And I just was hoping that you could explain a little bit whether the cost of maintenance and upkeep is somehow segregated out or if it's included in the 990. I believe we have a separate funding mechanism for that aspect.
We do. So that's one of the changes that we made as well, because we wanted to make sure, first I have to say the nonprofits are very responsible. I mean, they spend their money as they say they will, and they, you know, can easily prove that. So with this most recent funding request, we sent out a separate building funding request. So those 501c3s that are in county-owned buildings have the opportunity to also request funding that is specifically for the maintenance of the building. So we had two requests, and those are separate from this because it's not really a grant. It's us paying for our buildings.
Great. Thank you.
Honey Menefee for the record. The Historic Fourth Ward School Foundation, which is a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County, is requesting a sum not to exceed $120,000. This nonprofit program support funding request is for the same amount that was requested and funded last year. And the director, Nora Steffu, is here to speak on their behalf and to answer any questions that you may have, if you have any.
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Nora?
I do not have nothing. Thank you.
I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions either.
How would you like me to proceed? Do I need to read each resolution?
For just for the fourth ward?
No, like each of these have their own resolution.
For each of the nonprofits? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have different agenda items for them, right? Mm-hmm. Or am I missing something?
Yes. Do I read each?
I think you could just read the one for the fourth ward first.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a long one. That's why I'm asking for each.
It's not really a requirement.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we're necessarily required to read the resolutions.
I don't think you need to read the resolutions.
Okay.
You're okay. Sorry, I misunderstood you for a second. Would you be happy to entertain a motion then?
I'm happy to.
I've got to go to public comment, sorry. Yep. Is there any public comment about the grant money for the Fourth Ward School? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-644, granting the Historic Fourth Ward School Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $120,000 for the purpose of preserving the Historic Fourth Ward School Museum, a county-owned building, and supporting the history of the Comstock and Story County.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Moving right along to item number 13. This is discussion for possible action. If Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-645, granting the Story County G Posse, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $10,000 for the purpose of aiding and assisting all Story County residents with emergency management, youth programs, and other capacities.
Sorry. The Story County G Posse, a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County, is requesting a sum not to exceed $10,000. This nonprofit program support funding request is the same amount that was requested and funded last year. Hugh Gallagher is here to speak on their behalf and to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions about this?
You know, I have no questions whatsoever. I've been supporting those folks for 10 years or so and really appreciate, you know, volunteerism is a valuable commodity in any community, and those folks have always stood ready to support us. So I certainly support them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Vice Chairman?
I have no questions.
All right. Neither do I. So with that said, is there any public comment regarding this grant for the G Posse? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve a resolution number 22-645 granting the Story County Jeep Posse, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $10,000 for the purpose of aiding and assisting all Story County residents with emergency management, youth programs, and other capacities.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 14, this discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-646, granting St. Mary's Arts Center, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $128,000 for the purpose of preserving the St. Mary's Arts Center, county-owned building, and supporting arts and culture through education and cultural offerings.
Honey Menefee for the record, and I forgot to state that for the last agenda item.
Problem.
So, just making that correction. St. Mary's Art Center, a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County, is requesting a sum not to exceed $128,000. This nonprofit program support funding request is for the same amount that was requested and funded last year. Erica Perry may or may not be on line, if you could check. If not, I have a letter to read on her behalf if you have any questions.
She won't be here.
Okay. She wasn't sure. She was having internet connectivity.
Yeah. You can go ahead and read it.
Okay. So, her letter. Dear County Commissioners, thank you for your consideration of continuing funding to support St. Mary's Art Center. The last 2 years have been exceptionally difficult for most, and that certainly includes the Art Center. While I may be unable to attend this meeting in person or via Zoom, I wish to reaffirm that we sincerely appreciate your time and consideration to continue the same level of funding support as last year. This critical funding will be carefully managed and used to continue our work offering arts and culture programming, community events, and caring for the beautiful former hospital property. We will always continue to seek additional grants, foundation, and donation support as well, but are deeply thankful for the county's consistent support. We are a very small staff and deeply invested in elevating the property and our offerings. It has been our honor as the longest-running nonprofit in Story County to continue our efforts as stewards of the property and as contributing community members. We have many plans and a vision to continue preserving and restoring the property, expanding our offerings, and engaging even more with our community and tourists. We look forward to sharing our upcoming calendar and plans along the way, and hope to see you and Story County residents at the Art Center in the future. Thank you again for your consideration. Best regards, Erica Perry.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, any questions?
No questions, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
I don't have any questions.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding the grant money for St. Mary's Art Center? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-646, granting St. Mary's Art Center, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $128,000 for the purpose of preserving the St. Mary's Art Center, a county-owned building, and supporting arts and culture through education and cultural offerings.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 15. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-647, granting the Community Chest, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit, the sum of $289,500 for the specific purpose of funding health and human services and educational programs.
Honey Menefee for the record. The Community Chest, Inc., a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County, is requesting a sum not to exceed $289,500. This nonprofit program support funding request is $30,000 more than was requested and funded last year, and this increased amount is intended to go toward personnel and operating costs. The Deputy Director, Michael Ann Lazzarino, is here to speak on their behalf and answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions about the Community Chest money?
I don't have any questions, but in these amounts, I think that it would be prudent at some point along the way to see a financial breakdown of use. And, as a sidebar, we ask all of our departments here in Story County when they're creating their budgets to look carefully at the money that's absolutely needed. Not necessarily add a percentage on the top of what they used last year, but what do they actually need, whether it be more or less? And in this case, $30,000 more. But I think with these numbers, it would be good at some point. And I'm prepared to approve this budget, but I'd like to see a financial overview, if you would, so the board could review how those funds are being expended.
We can absolutely provide that. We have that information.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Vice Chairman Mitchell, you have anything?
Thank you. I agree. It would certainly be prudent for us to check into it. I will also point out that that Michael Ann shared with us a little earlier some of the expansions that they recently have done in expanding youth programs, expanding child care, expanding in the infant care, and some of those other things. And so there are some very tangible program expansions that we're enjoying right now as a result of their work.
And of significant value, so I'm not underscoring that. Yep. But at some point, good fiscal responsibility requires that you take a look at the
absolutely
schedule.
Laura Mather for the record. So I just wanted to speak on that behalf because absolutely, I completely agree that we need to be very careful about how we fund organizations and make sure that our citizens' dollars are being spent very wisely. So we have a pretty extensive grant packet that we provide these nonprofits that they have to provide for us. So again, that 990 that I talked about breaks down all of that. The Community Chest is excellent about providing us very thorough financial information. One of the things is we were thinking about how we respond to each of the requests with that not funding too much. One of the things that I did is I went through everybody's budgets and figured out what that percentage of the county support is. The support that Story County provides the Community Chest is about 10% of their budget. It's a very small amount of their budget. So just to kind of, you know, put everybody at ease, we do request a lot of financial information from these organizations.
That's great. And maybe we add to our process as we're considering these requests a summary, a kind of a high-level summary that comes to us prior to this hitting the agenda, and then we can delve beyond that as needed. So I think that'll be helpful for us. We don't need to get into the level of detail that you have for sure, but at least
great.
Have something in front of us so that we can take a quick look.
Absolutely.
In future years.
Sounds good to me, gentlemen. Is there any public comment regarding the Community Chest funds? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you entertain a motion?
Yeah. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-647, granting the Community Chest, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit, the sum of $289,500 for the specific purpose of funding health and human services and education programs.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number 16. This is consideration for discussion of possible action. Consideration of possible approval of resolution number 22-648, granting the Comstock Community Television Inc. a 501c3 nonprofit, the sum of $24,750 for the specific purpose of purchasing equipment to provide cable television service to the residents of Virginia City and Gold Hill.
Honey Menefee for the record. The Comstock Community Television Inc., a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County, is requesting a sum not to exceed $24,750. This nonprofit program support funding request is a new one this year, and Joe Curtis is present and able to speak on their behalf if you have any questions about this funding request.
All right. Thank you, Honey. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Honey or Joe regarding this item?
I'm curious, the Comstock Community Television, is this the first year entity that's requesting, or am I behind them? Yes. We haven't seen them before.
Correct.
No.
This is their first
year. So could you give us a little more background on the group, the 501c3, and what their
Joe, would you like
mission to? Might be? Mm-hmm. Oh, here comes Joe. I know it's going to be the right thing.
You're tired, so I can say anything I want now.
Hey, it's nice to see you. This is what it takes to get you back in here. You know, this is a worthwhile effort.
Thank you. Joe Curtis for the record. Comstock Community Television System has been in operation since approximately 1956. That's before Clay was born.
New parents. Very new. So,
and Jay.
Maybe.
The cable system was originally put into operation by several individuals. That one was the owner of the Union Brewery, who was Gordon Lane, and he was a radio aficionado, and he laid some of the very first cable in the 1950s to accomplish this. It required us to place a makeshift antenna up on top of Mount Davidson, hence the telephone poles that you see stuck up there at the top. And they had a regular old on your roof type of antenna that was there that grabbed the signal from Reno for Channel 8, the first TV station in Reno. And then it allowed us to put an antenna on the roof of the residences and businesses. And it was, then you could get pretty poor television, but you could get some television service for one station. Then we gathered a little bit more stations after that. And there were four families in the community that each put up $12,500 to fund putting this system together. Were able to have television in Virginia City. Since that time, the system has expanded out to a point at one time that there were as many as almost 600 subscribers in the community. Then came along satellite TV and cable systems and streaming situations and all of that. And unfortunately now we have progressed to a point where we have accepted, or we have provided to the community, approximately 37 channels. Currently, the equipment is quite old. Many of the receivers that we have that we get the station equipment on is equipment that we've had for years, and we buy refurbished and used equipment to replace it when we have the opportunity to do so. Gary Greenland has very much one man operation of continuing to keep the system in operation and functioning for the community. One of the most important systems or situations with the Comstock Cable Television System is that the United States has a an emergency alert system for the entire United States. As part of that emergency alert system, which you hear every once in a while being tested with the beep, beep, beeps and that sort of thing on your radio and TV, is that we have that service applied to us and through our equipment that comes in from Channel 8. And so that's our only way for knowing if there's a regionalized emergency within the area. And that's broadcast to the TV stations, radio stations. Of course, now we have some other alert systems that go to your cell phone as well. But the Comstock cable TV system has, over recent times, because of the advent of all of these new technological reception capabilities, we have dropped down to 100, and the last I knew it was 123 as of several weeks ago, because so many places are going to other systems, satellite TV and that sort of thing, Roku television, that types of stuff. So in order to be able to continue this, the providing of cable television to the community, which is has a board of members of a board of directors that oversee it, We've got to have some new equipment, some actual brand new equipment that replaces some of these receivers. The head end of the system is located back up here on the side of Mount Davidson, and if you stand in the right spot, you can see the satellite dishes that are up there. There's, I think, three or four, if I remember correctly, satellite dishes. One of the problems is last week, right now, Channel 4 and Channel 8 are, Channel 4 is off and Channel 8 is spotty. And it's a result of the windstorms that we've had in the last couple of weeks that jostle those antennas around. And then they have to be repositioned. We are in need of a technician. We need to find a technician that can do that stuff as there's personal problems that with our technician now needs to be able to address on his time, and we're looking for a technician to be able to help us with that. But in order to continue to provide this service, we will have to have some better equipment to provide that. And Mr. Greenland provided us with a listing of all of this equipment that is needed to be replaced and with efficient stuff. And I think hopefully that's a kind of an overview. And it's all cable system through the community is all just strictly by Gary Greenland. And we have a boom truck that he uses to keep the cables in line and in service, hookups Barbara Bowers, for so many, many years, since almost the inception, took care of all of the finances. We've now transitioned to other finances. Mary Lou Walling was the president for I don't even know how many years, and she retired, of course, from the area and moved back to North Carolina with her kids and her husband, Doug. Was been around that Marshall McBride and I sit on the system board. We're the only two family members continuing on the board that are members of the original four families that provided the thousands of dollars to start the system. And questions?
Interesting historical perspective. How broad a reach does the program have? Is it Virginia cities? Is it Gold Hill? What kind of a reach would you have currently?
It goes to Gold Hill. The Gold Hill Hotel has a connection, but it does not go down into Silver City. It's strictly by cable. I forget the technical statement or what the cable is called, some numerical number. But it's only within Virginia City itself. We are looking for, and we are talking actually with, have talked with persons and companies for potentially purchasing the system from us to provide even greater service and internet service. That hasn't been. We have a board meeting this Wednesday in the afternoon where we'll be discussing kind of where we're going from here.
Yeah, I'd be curious as to what the long-term probabilities are. Will technology catch up and no longer be necessary, or do you see this as being a utility that we need to continue?
The problem, yes, I think for at least the short term we need to. The problem is there is no high-speed or fiber optics, if you will, high-speed internet services to Virginia City. There is no fiber optics to the homes, to the residences, to the businesses, many of them anyway. There's fiber optics, if I'm not mistaken. I think it runs down C Street. Is that correct, Austin, I think? But there is no direct connections, and to our knowledge, AT&T has no intention whatsoever to provide fiber optics to each of the structures in the community. So somehow we need to provide television. There's a lot of shut-in people that do not, that if they don't have television, they don't have much to do but sit there and maybe read books or something. Many of the seniors in the community do not have personal computers for various reasons, such as not having the ability to really understand and utilize a computer, or the financial capability of having computers to have streaming television come in. So we're kind of in a rock and a hard place situation with television service to Virginia City.
So once we can expand our fiber programs here in the community, this particular process won't be necessary. That fiber could replace that? Would that be a fair thought?
Yes, it probably would be a fair thought. However, as you, I'm sure you're well aware, that when as soon as you transfer over to a television system, Spectrum in Reno, or that, I don't know other names, Comcast, I think is another one someplace. Their rate, just look at what kind of rates. It's going to cost you a minimum of $100 a month to have those kinds of systems, where we currently charge $44. But the price of equipment, and that's why we buy used equipment off of eBay, off of other sources, of companies that have that. So that's why we had decided this year that we needed some help. Our income is way down for a number of reasons, because of the technology of people just converting over to satellite television and that sort of thing.
I understand. Thank you very much for that. I'll pass the baton to the other question.
I do just want to interject, Commissioner Gilman. I've been working with several entities regarding the rural broadband project, if you will. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, sooner rather than later, we will be able to deploy broadband to the home. And I believe that there are even some grants for low-income residents.
Yeah.
So that we will be able to bridge the gap where if Comstock television isn't available, that they're able to get some other source of, you know, television through fiber internet. So we aren't leaving the community without a solution should Comstock television not be a solution anymore. I just wanted to make that known so that, you know, the community knows that we are looking out for them. So anyway.
Very good point, Commissioner. Jay, I appreciate it, because we're kind of in that situation where if we don't have it, we don't have a situation to be able to provide television service to people. So we are, even though we're sandwiched between the largeness or middle largeness of Carson City and the expansive largeness of Reno. Virginia City is actually a unserved or a somewhat unserved or underserved community for internet service and for television capability. Each one of the stations that is out there charges the Comstock cable television system a fee per subscriber that we have. Channel 8, Channel 4, Channel 2 all refuse to provide any even a discount to us. We have to pay the same price that they sell their broadcasts to Spectrum or anybody else. Many places in the state of Nevada, in the central Nevada and the eastern part of Nevada, have what are called translators that the television stations themselves place out into the areas so that they can get these. I mean, even places like Wells or Wendover, and these places have translators, and you'll see them broadcast on the TV every once in a while. They'll announce them. We've approached that and asked them with it, and no station is willing to provide a translator because each station has to provide their own translator for transmission to the community. So it's a real problem for us. I'm always appalled by the fact that the historic aspect of this community and being stuck in the middle of Reno and Carson that nobody cares about us in terms.
Well, at least they leave us alone.
Well, it's. I think it has to do. We're not a big enough advertising base for these folks. It's not worth for them to do that because we don't. That's theoretically, or what they've told us, we don't spend enough money in their communities to make it worthwhile.
Well, it would seem like in the short term, this funding would certainly serve a local base with some safety that wouldn't exist otherwise.
That's correct.
It may be short-term at this point. It's hard to say what comes with the future, but it appears to me this funding would be important because of the emergency broadcasting and the capability to receive that news.
Well, hopefully we'll make some decisions this Wednesday.
Don't worry, Joe. I'll get you streaming Sons of Anarchy on Netflix soon enough.
I promise.
Thank you.
County manager, up. No, that's not. Longest wind down air horn in Nevada.
It's probably not necessary, Austin Osborne, for the record, but I feel more comfortable letting this board know that I'm a board member of Comstock Community TV. I don't believe that has had any influence whatsoever in this process with staff putting this together with this board, but I just want to let you know. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I left off with Vice Chairman Mitchell. Did you have any questions about this?
I don't have any questions. There certainly are some questions about long-term viability of cable television in Virginia City, but as you mentioned, Commissioner Gilman, I think, you know, short term, it fills a need, a pretty essential need, and I think, you know, we take it on a year by year basis, and certainly, until or unless we have a viable alternative to make sure that we have connectivity for everybody, it's important to maintain what we have at least for now.
I agree.
I did also want to mention I did hear from a member of the public. I think she's on the call, and so certainly she can comment herself, but she's just expressing her support for continued operation of the cable system. ask us to support it.
Great. Thank you. I have nothing further. So is there any public comment regarding this specific item? You know the deal, sir.
I'm Tom Zachary, an Outlander. Here's my high-speed internet connection. I have DirecTV, I have HughesNet, I have no problem with this as long as you're going to spend my tax money, you can pay for those.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other public comment? Not seeing any other public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve resolution number 22-648, granting the Comstock Community Television, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit, the sum of $24,750 for the specific purpose of purchasing equipment to provide cable television services to residences of Virginia City and Gold Hill.
There's a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. I did just want to add, I'm sure it's not what you meant, Mr. Zachary, but the county is not funding the broadband that we're looking at getting. It'd be a private company that comes
I'll take the DirecTV. And we don't get Channel 8 right now because Channel 8 isn't on DirecTV or something.
Right. Just wanted to clarify that since I brought it up. All right, moving on to item number 17, consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-649, granting Liberty Engine Company number 9, Incorporated, a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $10,000 for the purpose of preserving the Comstock Firemen's Museum, a county-owned building, and its historic contents.
Penny Menefee for the record. Liberty Engine Company number 1 is a registered 501c3 nonprofit in Story County and is requesting a sum not to exceed $10,000. This nonprofit program support funding request is for the same amount that was requested and funded last year, and Joe Curtis is present to speak on their behalf and answer any of your questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions regarding the funds for Engine Company number 1?
No questions.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I don't either.
All right, nor do I. Is there any public comment regarding the funds for Engine Company number 1? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah. Hi, Commissioner Mitchell. Move to approve resolution number 22-649, granting the Liberty Engine Company number 1, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $10,000 for the purpose of preserving the Comstock Firemen's Museum, a county-owned building, and its historic contents.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 18. This discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of resolution number 22-650, granting the University of Nevada, Reno, Story County Extension, a 501c3, nonprofit, a sum not to exceed $27,500, for the purpose of addressing contemporary issues in the area of agriculture, horticulture, community development, health and nutrition, personal and family development, and natural resources.
Laura Mather, for the record. Before we proceed with this one, there's an error on this, and that's totally on me. The extension is not a 501c3 like the other organizations. They are part of the university system, which is different. So can we proceed just by pulling that particular verbiage out?
So it's not a nonprofit at all, then? Or what is it? It's part of the university?
Part of the university system. So however the university system. But we don't provide funding for them the same way that we do the other nonprofits. This is they basically handle the 4-H and all that stuff for us. So it's not a 501c3 like the other.
So what I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, is let me take a look at the NRS and come back to this if we can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do I have that right? Lisa Taylor is here, so she could probably help me answer that question better.
Yes.
Lisa Taylor, UNR Extension educator for the record. We are actually a 501c3 because we have the documents. It's the university that actually, under the umbrella, because I have that document. I just can provide it, yeah, at another point, just for your information.
So you are a 501c3 nonprofit organization?
Yes. Extension is that part of the organization. And I had that document.
Okay, so the university as a whole is a 501c3?
I cannot speak exactly to that, but I'd be happy to send that information to you. But I have in my records the 501c3 documentation from NSHE, which is the Nevada System of Higher Education. So we're under their umbrella.
So forget everything I said, pretty much. I was wrong.
Yeah, but I do have that document and would be happy to send it on to you.
If I could still take a moment and maybe back to this.
Take a moment, sure. Or are we going to skip this for today?
I think I can get you an answer here pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would this be an opportune time to take a break?
Absolutely.
Because I was going to take a break after this anyway.
Okay. Super.
So we're going to call a 10-minute recess. See you back here at 10 to 11.